Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Anthony Johnson, and welcome to this edition of the Anthony Johnson Show. Let's get started. So last Saturday, there was protest throughout America and other parts of the world, to be exact, over the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis by Officer Chauvin, who basically checked his knee on the neck of Mr. Floyd at a time when Mr. Floyd was subdued, he was handcuffed, and he posed absolutely, positively no threat whatsoever to the office, the four officers, nor the general public. I think for me, watching that video, which I can't watch, you know, it was very difficult to watch it when it was happening. And when people try to replay it now, I just don't watch it. Because the way the officer was on this man's neck, the way his knee was on this man's neck, this defenseless man's neck, unarmed, again, cuffed, subdued, not a threat. The look on his face, or the police officer's face, was basically saying to not just black people in this country, but he was saying it to all ethnic groups in this country and throughout the world, that we are the police and we can do whatever it is we want and there is no accountability. And, you know, the bottom line is there hasn't really been any accountability with the police. Please go back. The first formulation of the police, not a posse, but the first formation of police was 1852. So that means that the police in the United States is officially 168 years of age. That's how old the police in the United States is. And in that time, there has never really been any accountability for the police. I mean, I'll give you an example here. In Philadelphia, we had a district attorney who went on record when they were the DA in the city of Philadelphia for 20 years, who basically came out and said, they don't prosecute police. They don't prosecute police. Amy Klobuchar, who is a senator from Minnesota, is interesting that she was the first to jump out there and say, this is a travesty. This is horrific. But when she was DA, when she was an attorney in Minnesota, she had a track record, a long track record, of never prosecuting police officers. When it was brought to her desk, they never were prosecuted. So maybe Officer Chauvin was basically saying, you know, I can do this because there's no accountability. We can do whatever we want. Maybe he truly felt that way. And I wouldn't be surprised right now he's in a jail cell in Minnesota somewhere, probably scratching his head saying, why am I in prison? Why am I in jail? We've always been able to do whatever we want to do, in particular to black people, to people of color. So what's the big idea? What's going on here? America may never change. You know, when people of color are still losing their lives, when black people are still losing their lives, when they are compliant with law enforcement, then what's the point of being compliant? Think of it that way. Philando Castile was in his car with his fiance and his child in the back of the car. When they were pulled over, he was asked. He told the police officer, he said, I have a gun in the glove compartment. I am licensed, registered to carry. And then when the police officer told him, all right, well, go into the glove compartment slowly and take out the gun. No problem, officer. And as he was doing it, the cop shot him. So even when we're being compliant with the law, black people still stand a great chance of being arrested, being assaulted, of being murdered. So the question is, why after more than a century of police brutality and countless demonstrations, are there still no policies in place to address the racist actions in America for law enforcement that submit to the most primitive and wretched behaviors? As I said earlier at the start of the show, that we had protests all around the country, here in Philadelphia last Saturday, and ultimately that peaceful protest turned into violence. It turned into people rioting and looting. And then throughout the week, this week, ladies and gentlemen, the protests were very peaceful, culminating in well over 3,000-4,000 people in Philadelphia peacefully protesting. Because that's what you want. There is, in my humble opinion, there is no excuse, none whatsoever, for rioting and looting in this country. Here's the thing that bothers me more than anything. I don't think we should be rioting and looting anywhere. That means you don't need to go into the nice neighborhoods or, you know, the nice areas where people live in gated communities and tear their stuff up. I don't agree with that. But the thing definitely that I don't agree with is when the rioters and the looters decide to destroy their own community. You know, people, one thing I heard a whole lot this week, people were echoing Dr. King. You know, Dr. King said a quote about those that riot, you know, to paraphrase them, people that riot and loot is the voice of the unheard. But if Dr. King was alive today, he would not co-sign to rioting and looting. He was saying that when people act this way, they feel that they have done everything possible, peaceful protest and everything, and nothing is happening, so they've reached the boiling point. But he does not condone, he wouldn't co-sign to it. They say that, you know, Malcolm X said by any means necessary, but Malcolm X would not co-sign to destroying and looting. He definitely wouldn't co-sign to destroying and looting your own neighborhood, in your own neighborhoods, because that's what we saw. People were rioting and looting in their own neighborhoods. Even where I live at, people were rioting and looting in the stores. That's some of these stores that's been in these neighborhoods for a number of years. Some of these stores that these rioters and looters were engaging in, that when their families didn't have enough money to buy food, that store, that supermarket would say, no problem, you live in a community, I know you, put it on credit, you give it to me when you get it, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. So they showed these rioters and looters showed their appreciation by doing that. And then the other flip side of that was some of the rioters and looters didn't even live in the city. They lived in the nice suburbs. So they would alienate the other rioters and looters who lived in the neighborhood that would go and tear up their neighborhood, and then they would get in their cars and go home while the looters and the rioters who live in that neighborhood, now you got to go into your house in the same block that you just tore up. And what happens is that when the police, what they're doing in this country, get away, because the attention is now turned away from what these four police officers had done to Mr. Floyd, to the focus now goes on the rioters and the looters. And that's what we don't need. This is why we have to keep our eye on the prize. Even when black people and people of color are cuffed and laying on their stomach, we can still lose our lives. And as I said earlier, George Floyd was subdued by the officers who, you know, he was subdued, who would go on to murder him. Mr. Floyd pleaded that he couldn't breathe, and we heard that echo Mr. Gardner. And he even called out to his mother. The officer murdered him, and there is no debate about it. Yet despite the video and the overwhelming evidence of the murder, there are Americans that still don't feel any sadness for the cop who murdered Floyd. There are people in this country, and I'm not saying more than what happened, is more sympathetic for the cop is getting more sympathy than Mr. Floyd. But there are people in this country that support the officer who murdered him. They're sending money to his defense account. They're supporting him because they feel like he was doing his job. And the bottom line is in this country that those individuals who feel that way, there's nothing you and I can say or do to show them otherwise. They have made up their mind that the police is corrupt in everything that they do. Everything that they do, no matter what. Except when them police do the same thing to a loved one, one of their loved ones. Then those same people who say police are just doing their job, they have a hard job, a difficult job, you know, they have to make decisions on the fly. And if you can't make those, if you can't make decisions like that, if you can't make correct, intelligent decisions on the fly, then you shouldn't be a law enforcement. You shouldn't be in law enforcement. You shouldn't be a police officer. Because anybody can carry a gun and a badge, carry a gun and wear a badge and say to protect and serve the general public, and then decide to bend the rules to their will. Anybody can do that, but it takes someone with integrity and character and intelligence to say, if I do this, if I go this route, it may be detrimental to not only the person, the general public, but to myself, to my well-being. So let me not go that route. Let me use intelligence. And we just don't seem to have that. Law enforcement failure was notwithstanding the variety among groups that have been subjected to police brutality in the United States. The great majority of victims have been African Americans. In the estimation of most experts, a key factor explaining predominance of African Americans among the victims of police brutality is an anti-Black narrative among members of mostly white police departments. Whereas racism is thought to be a major cause of police brutality directed at African Americans and other ethnic groups, minority groups that is far from the only one. Other factors concern the unique institutional culture of urban police departments, which stresses group solidarity, loyalty, and a show of force opposed to any perceived challenge to an officer's authority. So for rookie officers, acceptance, success, and promotion within the department depend upon adopting the attitudes, values, and practices of the group, which historically have been infused with an anti-Black racism. So what I'm saying here, ladies and gentlemen, is that they have, and the police, they have this solidarity, loyalty. Even if you saw a police officer, all police officers view it, if you are a police officer with this guy, he goes out and commit a murder, and you're standing and you watch this murder unhappen, it is your job in that, being a part of that fraternity, not to say anything. You're supposed to go along with whatever he says. Oh, well, the guy was running away, shot him in his back multiple times, but I'll drop the gun on his dead body and say, yeah, he tried to grab my gun. That's what happened. He was shooting too. And instead of you saying, no, I can't go, it's all basically what they're asking you to do, even rookies coming in, they're telling you to check your integrity and check your character and check your moral compass at the door, because being a police officer, none of those things are needed. You're not going to need those. Now, I'm sure some police officers would say, Anthony, you know, you're out of line because we don't all think that. Okay, that's a fair assessment. You may not all think that way, but unfortunately, there's not enough police officers to stand up and say, this is wrong. What I do see, and I'm sure that you may see, ladies and gentlemen, once those police officers are no longer police officers, then they start talking about all the stuff that's going on. Well, thank you for telling us something that we already know. You should have done that while you were a police officer. And then the comeback from them is that, well, I didn't want to say nothing then because my life was at stake. My life was at stake. That means if I would have said that this police officer actually killed that Black man or that Black woman or that Black child, then they would come after me. Like, what is this, the mafia? This is where we are in this country. See, structural racism, when people hear that, they think it's just one thing. One entity, real estate, buying homes, getting a loan from a bank. You know, a Black person go in, has the collateral, has everything, they get turned down because of the color of their skin. Structural racism. This school in the suburbs, the government gives them $20,000 per kid. School in the city, urban schools, they get anywhere from 8,800 to 10,000 per kid. These are structural racism. That's structural racism. No one talks about the structural racism in the police, in law enforcement. So we have to start asking ourselves, where did all this begin? So the interaction between African Americans and urban police departments were initially shaped by the Great Migration. For those who don't know what the Great Migration was, it started in 1916 to 1970, in which African Americans from the rural South was tired of getting lynched, was tired of being left out in the cold, decided to make that Great Migration north and west, especially following World War II, where the economics in the north, there were plenty of factory jobs open, so you could come and do well for yourself and your family. So most white communities, including white police departments, were unaccustomed to the presence of African Americans and reacted to their increasing numbers with fear and hostility attitudes that were exacerbated by deeply ingrained racial stereotypes. In other words, police departments in the north and in the west never really had a lot of black people living in the north at the time. And you had some black people living in the north, but not like the Great Migration, because they came by the hundreds of thousands. And it was like the police department in the north and west called the police department down in the south and said, how did you guys keep these guys in line? Because we're getting infused with a whole lot of black people coming up here. And you know what? The South said, we'll send you our playbook. And we all know what the Southern strategy was, you know. And guess what? The North and West law enforcement agencies, the police departments, used those tactics. Reflecting on the beliefs of many whites, Northern police departments acted upon the presumption that African Americans, and especially African American men, possess an inherent tendency towards criminal behavior. That is from the police playbook in the South, one that required constant surveillance of African Americans and restrictions in their movement, segregation, in the interest of white safety. So when we talk about segregation, the first thing jumps out is the South. It wasn't just the South, ladies and gentlemen, it was the North as well. It was the West as well. Another thing that has always been a part of our police in the United States, white nationalists have always pervaded law enforcement. There's a long, long history of the military, police, and other authorities supporting, protecting, or even being members of white supremacy groups. It's a widespread pattern as early as 2006, the FBI flagged it. Another FBI report in 2015 indicated that domestic terrorism investigations focused on militia extremists, white supremacist extremists, and sovereign citizen extremists often have identified active links to law enforcement officers. White nationalists connect through online networks and offline groups and openly share tactics for infiltrating and influencing police departments, Border Patrol, and the FBI, and the military. In Philadelphia, we had a police officer that wore a tattoo, and it was a white supremacist. And his response was, yeah, I've read this tattoo, but that doesn't stop me from being to following the law and protecting everybody. Let me get this right. You have a tattoo of a white supremacist tattoo, but you're saying you can be objective. You can be objective towards black people, Latinos, and Jewish people. You can be objective. Seriously? We have seen racist text messages, emails among police officers. For example, in San Francisco and Los Angeles, Portland, even here in Philadelphia, including among those in the management with direct authority over law enforcement practices. So even some of the captains and lieutenants in law enforcement share these horrific behaviors of white militias and extremists in this country, supporters of Nazism and everything. So in truth, with the level of violence committed by law enforcement in communities of color and on the border, even if possible racial hatred weren't part of the parcel of police culture, white nationalists in law enforcement and in many roles of the government, such as prosecutors, are dangerous because they routinely abuse their power to attack and deliberate communities of color. I'm sorry, debilitate communities of color. So I was watching a thing today on the news, the local news, and my good friend Chad Lasseter was on there, and they were talking about, you know, systemic, you know, white supremacy and structural racism. And it was deep because they were talking about how long it's been in place and that so many people share these white nationalist and racist beliefs, that structural racism is the reason why we are still, in many respects in this country, African American and people of color are still treated like second-class citizens. And that's not a general statement. That's just what it is. Because you honestly think if a black officer had a white man down on that ground like that with his knee on his neck and that white man is saying, I can't breathe, it wouldn't have taken 4 days to arrest this man. It wouldn't have taken 4 days. He would have been arrested on the spot. On the spot. His trial would have been Monday, that following Monday. He'd have been found guilty within 5-6 hours while the jury deliberated. That's how long it would have taken. That's how fast it would have taken. We still live in two Americas in this country. There's still two Americas. We have to sit down and begin to put policy in place, anti-lynching laws, not just at the federal level, not just at the federal level. Because what happens is when we have an anti-lynching law at the federal level, now they have to figure out what did they do? Was that a federal crime? Yeah, it was a federal crime, but then it becomes a more difficult. We need laws across the board, from the city to the state, to the national, that when law enforcement engage in these behaviors, when they decide that all of a sudden their body cam goes out and it can be proven that they did it, that they toyed with it to make sure that whatever crime they were committing, they didn't want it recorded, they must go to jail. This is not like the death penalty, ladies and gentlemen. Let me explain what I mean by that. A lot of people felt that with the death penalty, the more people that would go to the death penalty and die, the more crime would be, you know, people would think twice before they committed crimes, like heinous crimes, murders and things like that. And we see that it hasn't worked, and that's why many of our states in America have outlawed it. They've just outlawed, you know, capital punishment because they say it just doesn't work. And there's a point, there is a point. I still believe in, you know, it depends on the severity of the crime, and it can be proven without a shadow of a doubt. The scary thing is that at times you send people to die and they were actually innocent. I don't think it's because you made a mistake. I think structural racism says that black person should die, that person of color should die, and we're willing to look the other way to make sure that that evidence doesn't come to light. And then when it does come to light, my opinion has been, and lawyers knew about it, not only should they be disbarred, but they should go to jail. But I digress. When police officers go to jail, and I'm talking about serving real time, I believe that that deters other police officers. As a matter of fact, I believe individuals who say they want to be a police officer, I believe they really think long and hard before doing it because they understand if I'm becoming a law enforcement agent for ill reasons and I get caught up in some foolishness, I am going to jail. And depending upon what I did, I'm going to jail for a very long time. So we have to start putting laws in place. The marches, the demonstrations, minus the rioting and looting, is always good. When you see those hundreds of thousands of people showing up all around the world, marching, good. Strike while the iron is hot. Get those policies in the books. That is the only way we're going to be able to curb this. And when we start doing it with the police, with the structural racism, then we can do it with the other areas in this country. But it has to start somewhere. We have to stop marching and crying and complaining. And we have to now demand getting these laws on the books. And for all those politicians and would-be politicians, they either stop double talking and talking left, right, up, and down. If they can't do it, then you vote them out. You don't vote for them. You bring in people. You vote for people who are going to get it done. And if they can't get it done, enjoy this one term because you won't be there come the next election. We keep doing it until we get these things done. And I know you're saying, Anthony, it should have been done. You're right, it should have. But let's deal with what's in front of us right now. And I believe if we do that right now, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be on our way. Structural racism has to end. It is not going to end on its own because the architects of structural racism, they don't want to see it end. They don't want it to stop. So they're not going to do anything. It is up to you and I to make that happen. So I say, let's get started. Policy, policy, policy. I end this episode of the Anthony Johnson Show with We Can Be the Outcome. I sometimes think of my son on quiet nights and I weep, as I'm sure other parents raising boys of color do, because I know the hounds of racism are waiting for him. It desires him, craves him, and other young boys of color. The goal is to inflict psychological pain and the scars of racism that was inflicted on me and other black boys. The scourge, this hate that is more American than apple pie and the 4th of July, has its threads completely woven into this nation. Americans gave it life, a purpose, and hate and bigotry have taken refuge where it's embraced by many. Look no further than a sitting president that ran as a candidate on a platform of racism and division, and he won. As a black man, I understand the frustrations of racism and police brutality that's escalated to epic proportions in this country. However, I believe rioting will not address nor solve an issue that's plagued African Americans since 1852. The creation and structural racism of police departments throughout the United States. We must create policies in which corrupt law enforcement learn true and swift justice. Police didn't have to murder Sandra Bland. Police didn't have to murder Tamir Rice. Police didn't have to murder Eric Garner. Police didn't have to murder Mike Brown. Police didn't have to murder Eric Garner. Police didn't have to murder Freddie Gray. Police didn't have to murder Bothan Jean. Police didn't have to murder Breonna Taylor. And police didn't have to murder George Floyd. If we continue to fail to create and implement policies to hold law enforcement accountable for the brazen acts of systemic murders of African Americans, rest assured, that list will continue to grow exponentially. Good night.